I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Brace yourselves for unknowable horror, because the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has returned. Yes, Nerdy Show's beloved RPG audio drama of black comedy and Lovecraftian horror is back with an all-new series, a chilling tale called The Terrible Secret of Lot X. Head to CthulhuMystery.com or find the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program wherever you procure fine podcasts. Succumb to the maddening call of Cthulhu.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to RPG From Scratch, our 30th design episode. So with us today is obviously me, your host, Josh. I got Liam and Max.
Indeed.
So at the time of recording this, we're still playing in Max's campaign, Gloomtown. And I'm kind of wondering, Max, how are you feeling about it so far, about GMing? What are the biggest roadblocks you're running into?
Biggest roadblocks is not story, it's trying to make sure everyone's having fun.
Fair.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a sticking point for a lot of GMs.
I've been having zero fun, so.
Good.
Oh, no.
That's what I was aiming for, specifically for you.
You just zero fun.
Yeah.
Good job.
I wanted everyone else to have fun.
I am thoroughly enjoying living out my secret fantasy of being a very promiscuous Batwoman.
Yeah. I think it's working.
Not like the superhero.
I'm enjoying Cal the most, I think.
Yeah, he's, Utz is laying down some jokes.
But
the story part is fun. I enjoy making the story, watching you guys unfold in it.
I'm having a lot of fun. I'm wondering, like, tool-wise as GM, as we're creating the rule book, what kind of tool would be useful for... Because you've expressed difficulty at creating encounters.
Yeah.
Would, like, some kind of chart representing average difficulties...
Yes, that would be very helpful.
Okay. I think we'll do that then. Because I think if we used our rule of thumb that we created, we're, like, average 75% hit rate...
Yeah.
If we assume that some characters are going to have better and some are worse, that gives us a better kind of envelope to play in.
But also, it balances out pretty well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, Hoda is swinging with...
Like, a lot.
Plus 7 on turn 2, you know? And Nin's best is plus 3, so...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Nin is min-maxed and plus 3, so you kind of got to find ways around that. Like, to the point where I think maybe challenge should only affect damage. You know, like that, if it turns out, we'll see how it plays out, but the more I'm thinking about it, it's like, it challenge alone might unbalance the chance to hit so much in an encounter.
What if its first challenge is just a damage, second challenge is plus 1? So
maybe.
It's kind of like a rolling, if you keep doing it well.
But that's an extra thing to track on top of again, like how many rounds it's been.
But also, I don't know, I want champion to, at the end of encounter, to be hitting better, to kind of roll into it.
Yeah, although I do feel that once you add the fact that they can spend momentum at any time as well.
That, yeah. There is okay.
That. Right? Like, maybe that's something we can, not changing anything, just let's put that be in our bonnet, because I do think maybe chance to hit is overwhelmingly the damage
decider.
Decider, well, or whatever is the correct word that none of us can think of right now.
Attribute?
The primary stat in combat that affects overall damage per round, then maybe we should equalize it a little bit so it's a little easier on GMs.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Immediate changes, which I don't think I'll see any resistance to, is I think that dual-wielding weapons is kind of weak now compared to a two-hander because of the way that, like, granite attacks and stuff like that work.
Yeah.
Somebody wielding one-handed weapon is losing out just so they can do double strike or alternate what kind of damage they're doing, I don't think that's a big enough benefit. What if you can do an opportunity attack for each weapon that you have? So if you choose to wield dual weapons, the benefit is if they move, you can only pick one per opportunity attack, but you get two total
that works.
Per round.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you have the weapons on different sides of you. It's
yeah.
And it makes you a little more flexible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it makes you scary in a way that it should. Like, if I've got two swords out and you're trying to go around me on either side of me, you should be a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so we'll make that change. Because the benefit... Because right now, like, just being able to do double strike is good. But it's not that. Like, it just needs a little bit extra incentive. Cause,
I mean, I think there are flavor bonuses, too.
Yeah. And maybe, like, there's some stuff we can add into Champion later where there's an extra bonus to wielding two weapons.
Yeah.
You know, because you're going to get everything for landing a big hit with a big weapon.
Just makes you reasonably wary of someone with two weapons.
So I was thinking, every level, given now that we've introduced the dice tier system, the average damage per level increase is between 1 point of average damage and a half a point at every tier. Given that we know that, does character health increase too quickly in response to that?
I don't think it does, because monster tiers aren't going to work the same way.
Right. They don't have to, for sure. Yeah.
And the whole thing is, if you're even considering, like, okay, one or a half, well, over four rounds, that's getting close to what the magic user is going to be at.
Oh, you mean over four turns?
Yeah.
One round, four turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. I don't feel that it's the case that it increases too quickly. But the more I thought about it, the more I start to see that it might become that. But maybe just the secondary shit that pops off at higher level.
I think it also is, like, I wouldn't say a propaganda bonus or whatever for the player. It just makes them feel their character is getting...
More resilient.
Better, more in the story.
But even if it's a situation where, like, it just gives you an extra round or two to know if you need to run or encounters run slightly longer, I don't think that's terrible.
I agree. Well, you can always... I mean, let's be real. You could always just... add damage to whatever the monster does.
Yeah.
You can always say it does this plus seven now. That's not really the problem. My problem was just thinking in terms of making them scale identically. So a lot of the questions and stuff I'm bringing up are very quick decisions about scaling. So our initial thing about attribute defense was that it is 10 plus the relevant ability score. So if I'm trying to attack your body with poison, it would be endurance, right?
Uh-huh.
And then plus half your level. I think we got to remove the plus half your level because nothing else increases at that rate.
Okay.
So it's just 10 plus your ability score, but what that means is that you're level 20. Maybe you still have put 0 in endurance. They only have to beat 10. That way we can keep, if there's poisons that you drink or things like that, they have a fixed difficulty to resist them that you can choose to scale up on your own without it being automatically, like, the kings of a realm are taken down with one glass of poison. I feel like that's appropriate.
Yeah, just don't have it scale unless you need it to.
So given that, we started off this game talking about how you could spend momentum to increase ability scores or take a step down a path.
Uh-huh.
And then we removed that and said at every third step, you will automatically get one. I think I want to remove that now.
Okay.
So I want to hear reasons against doing this way, if you guys have any.
It sounds damn heretical, but we'll get with it.
What if... takes 30 momentum to permanently increase an ability score, and you level up.
Sold.
So every time you take a step, you get an ability score?
No. You can choose to spend 30 momentum and gain a step,
okay,
which levels you up, or you can spend 30 and increase ability score, and you level up.
And so you gain hit points? And...
Yes. You gain a fixed amount. We'll say maybe 4. It's just in line with what the lowest makes, so you're never below what the lowest would get. Because there's secondary benefits to it, right?
There is.
So, for instance, like, it sounds bad only gaining 4 if you're Citadel. But if you're Citadel and you're like, I'm already way ahead of the curve in hit points, I need more endurance so I can wear better armor. Or more strength. Or more dexterity. I want to hit more often. And it'll increase my dodge.
I like that it's an option for that situation. And no one is forced to...
I would still say 5 just to split the difference. But it's also a thing for, like... casters feel really, really squishy when you play them.
Yeah.
Like, super squishy.
I think in a good way, though. It makes you real cautious.
I think it makes you real cautious, but it also the lack of defenses and the lack of reactions we even have built in on early levels, it would be nice to be like, oh, I'm going to increase my ability to hit and gain an extra hit point than I usually would be okay. very useful as an exhaust valve, especially if you just keep getting knocked down.
Well, how about, what if we change it then to 40 momentum, 5 HP? Because that puts you right in the middle. I mean, you still level up.
Yeah.
By the way, so everything else increases as well.
It just seems if you're trading off a step down a path that probably has more hit points and its features, and a lot of them are pretty good.
Sure.
Like 40 momentum seems like a lot. Like the attribute skill is going to be that can be really, really useful. I just don't think it becomes way less valuable at 40. There's a cost benefit of I could do something else with that.
It's true. I guess that's my worry is I think it's exactly as valuable as it needs to be for that person who decides to do it, right? Like so if you're like, well, I'm not going to take a step because I really need this thing.
Uh-huh.
If we make it 20,
I'm saying
you're leveling up at 20, you know, like yeah. every time.
I'm still saying 30. It's a situation where you have to pick between a step and an attribute. And and you don't have to do extra math.
Yeah. So a step or an attribute, and how much health do you gain?
I don't think 5 is a lot.
I think 5 is fine. I was thinking of...
6 is way too much, though.
Yeah, like, 6 is too much.
I feel like 4 is not enough. 6
five
is way too much.
Yeah. My thinking was that maybe if it was at 40, we could fold in an increase to your profession at the same time. But I think that actually should be separate. Okay, so let's do that. Let's say 30 momentum, you can permanently increase one attribute. You gain 5 health, and you level up.
Great. Should there be an upper limit to where your attributes can go?
No.
Okay.
Because if you make a, let's see, level 9 characters,
uh-huh.
okay? So we've got 2 level 9 characters. One is pure death. So he's gone 10 steps
uh-huh.
down the path of death. And then you've got a guy who has 9 strength. Or sorry, he's
probably has 12.
He's added 9 to his strength. He has 12. And then he's got +3 to hit. And he's a champion, so it keeps building as his challenge target dies. At level 9 in our game, that's much higher equivalent than level 20, the D&D or Pathfinder. We're talking like the equivalent almost of a level 20 character.
Yeah.
At level 9, does being able to do, say you got a Warhammer like Hoda, so it's the most damage you could do. So it's +25, +9, so +20, +34. So Helmet Splitter, if we use this rule, would do 4d10 plus a d4, plus 24.
Yes.
That's a lot.
That's a whole lot.
Right. So a crit is 68.
Uh-huh.
Level 9 death. Well, actually, let's think. It's hard to quantify because they now have multiple undead creatures running around
yep.
at the same time, all of which are boosted by just the raw damage of their level increasing
yep.
all the time. That doesn't sound beyond the pale.
No.
I think that's okay. Maybe we'll just play with it for a while. We'll probably do another mock combat with higher level characters where somebody just spends attribute points.
I don't think it's going to be broken. I was just bringing up the idea. Like,
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
think
yeah.
it's a problem.
No, I want any objections because I do think it, to me at least, it sounds appropriate. Because you can make your character and be like, yeah, I'll take another step down this. I just really wish I had more intelligence so I could land my attacks more often
yeah.
with ranged, you know, with spells. I feel like I want to give you that option before you decide to go further down a path where you feel underpowered.
Or correcting, you know, a character creation mistake
yeah.
where you're like, ooh, I should have counted less on the damage and more on the chance to hit.
Yeah, and the fact that you level up in addition to it, I think is the thing that solves it. Because before it would have been
yeah.
way too much to just spend 30 and gain an attribute. But now we have a leveling mechanic where you gain health increase your damage for everything. All right, cool. I like that. So now let's talk about professions. So the way we had it before, every 2 steps you increase your profession by 1. I think that's both too fast and or too slow. And also, there's no momentum cost associated with it. I think momentum needs to be folded into every one of these decisions.
Yes.
So how much momentum to add 1 to a profession? Should it be a sliding scale?
I think it should increase.
Increase in difficulty?
I think to become a novice at something isn't generally that hard to do.
Mm-mm.
You could spend a couple days, get okay at something.
Mm-hmm.
To slightly increase your mastery, though, takes years.
Right. So what if maybe 10 momentum for every point?
To like 5, and then it'd be like 15.
Well, no, I mean, no, sorry. Increase by 10 momentum.
Ooh, I think that's too high.
You think
so? Because that scales past a step real fast.
Yes. I like Liam's idea because you could break it down into like you said, novice, journeyman, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you're in that
so
level.
So there's like 3 or 5 points that only cost 10, and then you get to a certain level where you're like, when I make a thing now, it's the thing that I do. Like, but getting, yeah.
Because what's the cap on?
We got no cap. That's why I thought a sliding scale would act as its own cap.
But I'm thinking like 30. Is anyone going to have 30 in their thing? That would be mastery of it.
Oh, well, that would be like grand mastery. I think it would be a good one to 5 novice.
Remember here, so maybe by 5 for each point then? Because it won't increase by a fast, but like we're talking, if your character only sits in the back and is like a medic, you don't really care about taking extra steps if you're only going to use like one combo. You know, if you've built him a certain way and you're mainly concerned about solving or being a medic or making alchemical, stuff like that,
you might
just want to increase your skill. The fact that it could at one point cost more than taking a step down a path, I think does make sense.
Like, well, it's just that if you're adding a new one, because even in this situation, you're improving a thing that you're already proficient in. So you have 5 points considered?
Well, let's say...
Because that's maybe, already 25.
Maybe taking your first foray into it is... Well, so that's why I thought 10, right? So like my first foray is maybe 10 for the first, then a sliding scale of 5 times the number you're adding. So 10 for the first, so where you're like, okay... I'm going to spend 10 momentum, and I'm going to get a +1 to being a medic, like I'm studying, like say Nin with is just watching Cal trying to get her hands dirty.
Would it be too much to have something like, okay, well, you need to have used it 5 times?
I think the number,
because like why are you can spend momentum to be up, but if you actually like did 5 medical checks, like we're
so kind of thing, I think that idea is in the right. I think that's the right idea direction, but here's the problem is that a lot of stuff that happens in our game doesn't happen on camera.
That's true.
So what if I say like, okay, well, you've got a month to spend. What are you doing? Oh, my character's going to go and help out at the hospital.
All right,
you know,
cool.
Well, like how many do you really want me to roll checks to figure it out? You're like, you got a month worth of experience.
Yeah.
You can, if you want to spend the momentum and increase your skill, you can.
I like us giving options like that. Like I want this game to be 1992 Legos, not 2019 Legos. Like, you can do anything instead of giving a, here's what you do. Here's the blueprint, only do this. Put it on your shelf.
So the idea of, you got a big box of loose Legos.
Yeah.
And there are 6 different things on a picture that you could build out of these.
Yep.
And then just let them go nuts.
Because your GM is going to be the cap on anything they don't want in their game.
So instead of a rule for something like this, the only rule I want is how much it costs.
Yeah.
In terms of like, it costs this much to increase your profession. But the guidelines, I think it should be a month of serious practice increases you by 1 if you're willing to spend momentum on it.
I think that's got to scale too. I really do.
That's not a bad idea either. That should scale. Like, it can be shorter if it's been really intensive.
I also just think taking a single step into alchemy is a thing you can learn in like 3 afternoons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
And they're like, oh, I know how to make a thing. But to be like, okay, now I need to increase my step. I need to know how to make 20 things. Now it's going to take 2 weeks
just an exponential scale with no upper limit.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start then. But I mean, obviously, we say GM's discretion. Here's a guideline. If you believe that what they've just undergone, so for instance, you enter medical school to become a doctor. You enter boot camp to become a medic. You're coming out there with more immediate use skill.
Yes.
Than the person who went to college, who has just started college to be a doctor. At the end of 12 weeks, the person who went to boot camp is getting more immediate use skill that you would consider skill points, you know, like that you could put in. However, at the end of that time...
In their residency, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At the end of their schooling, that I would much rather have surgery performed on me by somebody who went to school for it than a medic. Yeah. If I have the option.
If you're like from 1 to like 6 years, you want the medic. And then after that, like,
maybe, yeah.
I'm saying someone who's been training as a doctor for 7 years is really just getting into it. They're out of school. They're getting a medic has had 7 years of experience. They're pretty good at it. But
and
then
field,
after
and
that,
field experience.
Yeah.
So I think like field experience should count for more.
Absolutely.
If it's extreme. However, I think that should be the sliding scale of GMs. You say like, For instance, if somebody goes to school to become an engineer, at the end of that time, they're going to have maybe a plus 7, whereas the tinkerer who's just been tinkering for 7 years is going to have a plus 4.
Horrible, horrible tinkering. You going to use them bodies?
I think there's the calcium in the bones, right? Maybe, yeah. I can get at it. Okay, so let's make a guideline then. So I'm going to do some quick math. Let's say it's 10 for your first point in a new profession, and your GM has to agree. What do you have to dedicate? We'll say, depending on the profession, between 3 days and a week.
Yeah.
Of dedicated practice,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's 10 momentum that you spend, right?
Yep.
Okay. So for your second point,
I would say 1 to 3, 10 momentum each. Then,
because getting to 5, then there's a point where, like, when you commutatively look at 5 and all of the costs combined, you're like, is that worth the 2.5 steps down a path?
Okay, so 1 point, 10 momentum, 3 days to a week of practice. 2 points,
10 momentum, 6-7 weeks.
I would say
2 months.
I would say 3 months.
Okay, yeah,
and that can be shortened with intensive. Mm-hmm. Experience, like, you know, 3 points a year, 10 momentum. And again, like, that is the length where if you're like, okay, well, a year passes, what do you do during that year?
Yeah.
You can just say, I do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if it's something that's happening in game, constantly difficult, that shortens dramatically.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now let's get on that sliding scale. 4 points.
I'm saying 20.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's do 4 points.
Because mm-hmm. the
20 momentum.
Because the time scale is now going to be the bigger part.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I think it stays a year. Because think about, you just did a year.
Yeah. You're
doing another year.
It's an additional year.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not 1 year or 3 years.
You're not saying, oh, well, I'm just going to spend 1 year and I'll get 4 points in a profession I've never tried. No. You live through each of these.
Yeah.
All right. And then 5 points. 30.
Yes.
Another year.
Yes.
Beyond 6 points, I'm saying 45 momentum.
That's, I thought you were gonna say 45 years. I was like, that's a bit steep.
I would,
but also probably realistic.
Yeah. I would say 40, but like 3 years.
Okay.
Because you're now getting real good.
So then we'll just make that the sliding scale from here on.
Yeah.
So it'll be no, you know what? I want to keep it 1 year.
Okay.
I want to keep it 1 year each time, but now the momentum scales.
That works. And a GM could be like, you were born a virtuoso. Here's 3.
Yeah. You could even say, like, I want to give up one of my steps at character creation. I'm going to start off just as core to have 3 points in additional profession.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be core ice, you could sit back there and fucking be an alchemist.
Does this level you up?
No.
Okay.
No, it does not.
That becomes scary.
Yeah, it doesn't level you up because we're talking 10 momentum chunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're doing something other than the step you're on,
uh-huh.
it doesn't level you up.
Okay.
What if you are focusing on that step?
What do you mean?
Would it level you up if everything was aligned?
What if it, like, levels you up?
You are a scoundrel. Your profession is scoundrel, and you are... getting to be a better scoundrel. Does that...
I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
What if it levels you up once you get to 5? Like, if you've got 4 points in something you haven't leveled up, and now you're like, I want to spend 30 momentum. I've spent a year.
I like that, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Because after...
Professions only matter in chunks of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After a year of doing something, you come out of it.
Yeah. Okay. So, at 5, every time you get... Because now, remember, momentum mm-hmm. cost is above 30.
Yes.
Every time you do it, you get a level. I like that.
Yeah.
Because if you're just, I mean, the main profession I can think of that is alchemy. You'd be like, I'm going to be the potion maker. I'm going to make bombs. I'm going to do all this, and I will spend the momentum to do it. Like, because now we're talking level 0, character creation. I create a character's alchemy, 5 points. Okay. 40 momentum, another point in alchemy. So maybe, okay, let's make it a flat 30, 5 and above.
Okay.
And it's another way to level.
All right.
How about that?
Yeah.
Do you get any health?
You got to.
Okay.
Like...
Maybe, okay, but it's a profession. It's a profession. I think you get 4. You don't get 5.
Deal. All
right, because you're not improving your body.
Like, no, deal with it. Like, that's a deal. But, like, yeah, no health, then that build becomes unreasonable and unsustainable. Yeah,
agreed.
Very
okay.
quickly.
All right, that's cool. So that's another way to level up your character. but I like that 30 momentum is what we think of as a level. So,
but it also makes a fun way of thinking about NPCs that you're in. We're like, oh, he's a scholar. He's very good at being a scholar. He is a higher level character, but he's a profession higher level mm-hmm. character. He's not an adventurer.
I like that. Okay. I feel like that's really good.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so now stealth rules. We haven't really – we talked about opposed roles. I think we have a lot of mental baggage around the systems we've played before regarding stealth and sneak attack and stuff like that.
Yes.
Because our scoundrel now doesn't use that. They use ambush tactics.
Yeah.
I think instead of having extra damage associated with an actual attack you do while sneaking, it's just an auto crit. If they have no idea you're there.
All right.
Dope.
Right? Just it hits, it crits, period. We're not there, it doesn't have, you don't get extra dice, you don't get any of that.
I will say I think we have to then also sublet certain magical abilities, because I don't think you should be able to stealth hit with a burning lance. I don't think that is possible, because it's big and bright.
Well, what if you still have to roll to hit, but it's going to crit no matter what? What if you get a bonus to hit? Maybe that's what it is. A bonus to hit. You get like a +5, period. Flat.
That's solid.
+5 to hit, and if it hits, it crits.
Asterisk, daggers, crit. Just instant. You just put it there.
Yeah, but I mean, like, sneak attacks fail even when people don't see you because they move.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just, because they don't know you're there. Hey, Bill, what was that? I feel like that happens. +5 to hit, auto crit.
Yeah.
Just makes me think of Hoda. Sneak attack with a fucking Peter Gabriel.
Which, by the way,
still
there aren't rules that make sense for that in other systems that I've played. Whereas, like, if you watch Seven Samurai, if that ain't Hoda waiting behind that door frame, waiting for the samurai to walk through, that's a sneak attack for sure.
A good swordsman parries the blade.
Well, what if he's drunk? He would never get that drunk.
A good swordsman.
Was a samurai.
Yeah, a good samurai. Mm-hmm. Has to parry a hammer. What are you joking?
Yeah. Even samurai used hammers.
They used guns.
Yep. All right, so in regards to homework, I think because of the crunch that we've been under with the start of a new school year and all this crazy shit, I've done two of the three, and I kind of want to talk about the third, and then we'll freestyle maybe a couple extra. So the first one I have is an artifact, living up to our game's namesake here, and I came up with the idea of arc beads, two polished white beads. They're a little bit bigger than a pill you would swallow, let's say, and 10 millimeter in diameter, and they hold to one another through magnetism, and they're highly polished. And when separated no further than 6 inches, they create an arc of superheated plasma that can be used to start fires or cut through certain materials, though very slowly. And the arc can be bent and shaped by rotating the beads relative to each other, but if they are held more than 6 inches apart, the arc vanishes, and they're unaffected by the heat they generate. They're cooled to the touch. I just put in that they'll attempt to join if they're closer than 10 inches apart, meaning just through magnetism, you know. And if one of the two is lost, they no longer function.
That's awesome.
But that's all I think they could use a better name than arc beads.
Thunder pearls.
Lightning pearls works good.
Yeah. Does it look like lightning, though, or does it look like the milky You know what I mean? Like a Jacob's ladder.
Is that... it's still electrical looking, though.
Yeah, but does it make the noise? Maybe buzz beads? Bzz, but that sounds like a sex toy.
Those are those black magnets that you hold in your hand.
Plasma beads sounds like a sex... They all sound... Just beads, anything, sounds like a sex toy.
You call them crackers. Cracklers.
Cracklers, I like that.
That sounds like the McGargle version.
Yeah. They may explode.
Yeah. You only have one. There's not a pair. You throw it and it just zaps anything.
You hold one out and another one will come.
Yeah.
From where you do not know.
It's like Thor's hammer in the first Avengers crashing through the...
It bursts through the ground up. You're like, oh shit.
Somebody's pocket has a hole in it. But I would almost think you would think of it, because the way you would use it primarily would be as a saw.
Mm-hmm. Or if there are some outside hinges.
Yeah. Or a torture device.
An arc saw?
Yeah. Or somebody's knife. Maybe like welder's knife. Like some profession you would not associate a knife with unless they had this.
We had a name for the Harad, who were nomadic, right?
Yeah.
Because that seems like a tool they would have out in the desert.
Eh.
A fire starter like that?
I think nobody has it until you find it. They're the Kadon.
Kadon.
Yeah, I think this is not a common thing, but you'd call it like a...
Sorcerer's Blade.
Spark Knife.
The Apothecary's like Friend.
Maybe Spark Knife?
Spark Knife works.
I like Spark Knife better. And that's the artifact. I just thought something just small that you would be like, you'd keep it in your bag and you're like, oh, I can't get through this fucking door. And you're like, you know what? We're gonna use this little thing and try to... You're going to use it like a portaband, like the portable bandsaws, you know? And I thought of... I got a monster here. I call them the Gaspers. And they were a once prevalent enemy to the ancient Savathians. These eel-like creatures were long ago defeated by a curse that destroyed their minds and culture. They sometimes slither up onto the land to find food despite not being able to survive long out of water.
Tight.
So they're 12 feet long. Their heads are mostly made up of a giant hinged mouth. Their own eyes are closed, and above and around their heads is a blazing orange wreath, below which hang a pair of ravenous spectral eyes that are always searching for something. The only warning that people venturing near affected shores will hear is them gasping very loudly, like every few seconds.
That is really cool, and it makes me think of, what if there was like a mix between an antlion and a lungfish?
Yeah, I like that too. What do you mean, so like it buried itself?
Buried itself, and you're just walking along, you step on it, and it pops out and tries to eat you.
I think there's a few, that's a trope we can exploit, you know, trapdoor spiders, ant lions, that kind of thing. We can do that too.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that maybe they slither, you know, they come out at night and you see like an orange glow outside the window. You're like, what the fuck is that?
That's awesome though. I like that.
But also maybe...
Well, they're also linked in history to something.
Yeah, you might find like an underground city of theirs, you know, that they were like a magical race and they don't have limbs, but they used magic to do things and shape things. I guess it kind of is similar kind of like to an Aboleth or a Naga.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The fact that they were biological that wielded magic and it backfired, so now they're just monsters. I think that could be a fun thing to do underwater. We don't have a lot of underwater stuff yet. Ritual, I didn't come up with one because I thought of like three different things and like what you'd really want to use magic for in the game. And I was thinking about combat stuff that you could begin outside of combat and then use in combat if you know it. Like maybe something where you could put a mark on someone's hand and if they touch the target's face with it, as an attack action, it would make it so that target has to roll twice and use the lower result on all attacks until it ends. You have to make an unarmed attack, basically, to land it. But the person who knows the ritual doesn't have to be the person who lands it.
They can mark someone else.
Yes. So, for instance, in our group, Nin would put it on Hoda's hand, and then Liam's character, Reggie, would be like, take the shot, Hoda. Stick it to their face, you know, and then the brand would be on their face. And maybe for like 1d6 rounds, they roll twice and use the lower result on every attack. Stuff like, so I think that one's fun, right? Like that's such a simple thing that, because in my head, the biggest roadblock I'm running into with coming up with rituals is the fact that they sometimes could just do something that another path could do.
Yeah.
Unless you could grant it to other people like this. Maybe the cost is low, but once you try to use it, you have to decide to try to use it. Maybe it does like a D4 of damage to you because it burns and you're going to put this on them. And then the moment, like you have to say an activation word, which makes it burn into your palm. And if you miss them, you miss them. It's gone.
That's it.
So what would we call that? Like, what if instead of the lower result, it's a chance to swing at nothing because it makes you hallucinate.
Ooh.
So it's not going to make you attack your friends, but it may make you attack empty space.
How would that be decided?
Maybe a roll of a d4. Maybe if they roll a 4.
Kind of like the Howards.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. If they roll a 3 or a 4, it lasts for 2d4 rounds. No, that's way too much. It could be 8. A d6.
What if...
A d6 of rounds.
They rolled a hit, and if they do hit, then they roll to see if they actually hit.
So that's very similar to the mechanics of blur and mirror image in D&D, and I think they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You put it on them. I feel like it's likely they're still going to hit you, right? So let's make 3 and 4 normal. They know who they're attacking.
Yep.
Everything that 1 and 2 are different. So 1, they attack an empty space. What's a fun thing you could do with 2? They grant the upper hand to everybody?
Yeah, they cower in fear.
Or maybe they just, like, 1, they attack an empty space and they're not.
What if they would only attack an ally?
If they've got no allies, it's useless.
That's true.
Yeah.
Hmm.
They just lose an action? No. They're too afraid to move?
So I think 1 and 2, no matter what, they grant the upper hand.
Yes.
A 1, they...
Paranoid?
Maybe we can give them paranoia as a flat thing.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's just a 50-50. 50-50, okay. they get the right target.
Okay. I like that.
So they still have to roll to hit, all that, and then 50-50, they attacked an empty space. But they get the paranoia condition. They can't benefit from ally buffs.
Yep.
It's like mark of paranoia. Or like hallucination paranoia. Odds, they get the right target.
Okay.
Evens, they attack empty space.
With paranoia?
No. I think they always grant the upper hand.
Okay.
So if they're attacking you, you can't make an attack against them.
Nope.
But if they miss you, you do.
And everyone else does.
Yeah. Well, anyone in melee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, they grant the upper hand and they get that 50-50. I think that's enough of a thing to be like, for 1d6 rounds, that might really turn the tide.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. What do we call that? I think mark, right? Like it's something with a mark. Because you put a mark on the person and you put a mark on the enemy.
Red eye mark?
Mark of the hunted?
Yeah.
Because they feel like they're being attacked by more people than they are. Oh, mob, lynch, things like that where it kind of increases the number of people who are attacking you. To you, at least.
Mm.
Blood branded.
Brand of the fugitive.
The fugitive's brand? I like that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of somebody.
All right, Kimball.
Yeah, somebody who is hunted is the idea, right? Like,
yeah.
So somebody who's being chased by a lot of people is a fugitive. Yeah, fugitive's brand.
I like it.
Okay. Now, what's the ritual? I think it takes maybe an hour to prep.
Sounds good.
Maybe the person preparing the ritual has to take on a condition, like a stage 1 condition.
Paranoia would be good.
Or just roll. You have to roll.
Oof. Maybe.
It wouldn't make sense to get a concussion, though.
Or like a broken arm or something.
Paranoia makes sense.
Yeah.
Although it would suck to not benefit from ally buffs. But you can still get healed. So that's good. Yeah, so maybe you gain paranoia.
You're sitting there doing the ritual. You're just concentrating and you're snapping your arms like,
yeah.
Well, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, so you gain paranoia for 24 hours.
Because
it'll last for 48 on their hand.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Right?
That's doable.
So you're like, if you know you're about to showdown with a boss, you're like, okay, you know what? It'll be worth it for me to have paranoia in this to get the chance for them to have this for 6 rounds. It might let us mop up.
Do you need to know the mark first?
Oh yeah, any ritual you need to have learned.
No, I mean the target.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it lasts for 48 hours on the recipient's hand. It deals damage to the recipient. So I think it should be more than 1d4, right? Like it should burn to do this. This is a huge debuff. Like they grant the upper hand for maybe, I think 2d4 is appropriate then. If we increase the damage it does to the person.
Okay.
And you gain paranoia, 2d4 rounds, right? 2d4 damage.
Sounds good.
It's an unarmed attack that deals no damage.
Because two rounds is great.
Yeah, two rounds. If you roll snake eyes, it's still worth it.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you roll boxcars.
Yeah.
8 rounds, that's the entire fight, plus 2 probably.
And that guy is probably dead.
Yeah.
It's going to go quick, too.
But the idea that, like, your healer might get paranoia, that's not nothing.
Mm-mm.
That is a risk-reward situation.
Yeah.
You might have to sit in a cave for 24 hours and fight the next day.
Maybe. I think there are multiple times I've played in tabletop RPGs where I would have gladly taken it.
Yeah.
to get that benefit. But that still would have mattered. Like, it's not like, oh, well, it doesn't matter because we're giving it to this guy. Like, it always will matter in our game. Because if you have somebody with command, it means they can't grant you attacks, which are heals, nope. Right? And they can't grant you movement to get out of danger. Yeah. And zealotry is the same thing.
Damn. That's cool, though.
As much as I like getting them in games, I really don't like receiving weapons that are a plus one or a plus two. Like, I like receiving weapons. So in Pathfinder, I'm like, I need a plus two sword, magical sword. I don't have a magical sword at all. My freestyle fighter has a falchion and a long sword, mm-hmm. and whatever he picks up. Like, he just uses anything he finds. But if I had a plus two sword, I would qualify for an extra thing where there's a combat feat called Ghost Slayer. I can spend a move action as a freestyle fighter to gain a combat feat I don't know, and it allows me to be able to hit ghosts for reduced damage, whereas normally it would,
yeah,
I just can't do it. But if I have a plus two weapon, I deal full damage with that feat. So like, we just had a character death, and now we're trying to figure out how to get, like, sell all the shit we have, because we now have some downtime, and with all the shit we've got, like, I could afford to get I could spend more than half to just get my character a plus two weapon to qualify for that feat, or everybody else can get kitted the fuck out. Yeah. because it's really expensive. And like, I'll be honest with you, my character does not need the help. Like, he's doing great. I can drop my two-handed sword, pull out a long sword and a shield, and then spend a move action to gain a feat where if I don't attack on my turn, I get plus four extra AC.
I had an idea for an artifact.
Let's hear it.
It is a Dairon tube about 15 inches long.
Okay.
And it swallows light.
So it's the street darkener from Wizard People?
It just, in a directional field.
Like a cone?
Yes. It just swallows all light.
Is it an anti-flashlight?
Yes.
That's cool. I like that. So it's my exact flashlight, but shoots darkness.
So it's just a cone of no one can see in, no one can see out.
So it can blind the people who are in it.
Yes, because their eyes won't be able to function because there's no light, and eyeballs won't function without light.
I like that.
I like it a lot.
I feel like you would use it, like, maybe it was invented for a completely different purpose than combat, right? So it was invented because you had light-sensitive components, and, like, you had to see where they were, and then you would turn that on so that you could work on them before you sealed them back up, maybe using, like, infrared or something.
Yeah, but if you point it at somebody, their eyes cease to function.
Tight.
Doesn't damage them. They just can't operate.
But nobody can. In all of our races, there's no such thing as dark vision in our game.
Nope.
And even then, dark vision still requires light.
Yeah.
This,
just a little
you
bit.
You cannot shine a light into this.
Yeah.
Nope.
No, dark vision does not require light in other RPGs.
Oh, I'm just talking about, like, biology. Like,
oh, yeah.
Everything requires a little bit of light. No one can see in the dark.
Right. Snakes would be able to bite you, though.
Yeah.
Because they're heat sensing. Yeah, I like that.
That would be a thing.
No, I like that a lot, actually. Because dark vision is not a mechanic in our game. Neither is dim light vision.
Blind things are, though.
Blind things are. Yeah. So if you see something that's obviously blind.
Got no eyes. Mm-hmm.
Why would you limit yourself in that way? And you'd say, oh, that's a weakness for that device. You wouldn't pull out the spark knife.
Yeah.
To fight creatures.
To fight fire.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah, it's fine.
A creature that is 7 inches wide. Defeats the dark knife.
Also, the spark. Yeah. It's true. Also, the spark knife is not a weapon. Like,
no.
You could damage something with it, but you would rather use a brick than that. You know. Okay, I like that. What do we call it? So it shoots a cone of darkness. How far?
Three squares.
No, three it's got to be. Well, actually, if it's used for fine components,
yeah.
Think about it. Like, it's something for working on something, right?
Because why would they invent this?
15 feet.
Yeah.
It goes 15 feet, period. Maybe, well, let's think of it as a cone, right? Cone 3. Well, no, cone 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's a cone 3 from your space of darkness, and it just, anything sight-related, it stops. Light, you can't see light in, light does not go in, light does not come out, period.
Mm-hmm. What about lasers?
No, that's light.
Dope, because that's actually maybe the real reason it would be invented.
That's a really good, using it as a defense against lasers? That's a really, yeah, Liam, good job.
That's dope. That's fucking great.
Plus one life momentum.
God, I can't wait to turn that in and become, like, I don't know, better at adulting or something.
I'll use it on health insurance. So let's, by the way, we're in America.
I'm dying.
So let's go.
The light thief.
Maybe.
Dark Cone Projector.
I almost want to steal Street Darkener from Wizard People, dear readers.
I want the opposite of a flashlight.
Well, it's a tube. So it looks like a flash. It looks like a maglite.
Yeah.
But what if we saw it and we've never seen a maglite before, what would we call it? We call it the Black Baton.
Oh, I like that.
Ooh.
That's a good name for a sex toy, too.
I'm blanking right now, but what's the Dark Moon?
Oh.
Call it the eye or the...
Oh, that's a good idea, Max. Shit.
Or their dick. Either way.
Zerusha. Zerusha's Baton.
I like that.
Zerusha's Rod.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Zerusha's Rod.
So somebody finds an old lab and they're like, this is a holy place.
It is dark.
But just being a defense against lasers is way better than mine.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Just, they're, you're in a weird dungeon. There are trip lasers and you're just like, no.
And also flavor text. Like maybe it feels cold in there.
Oh, definitely.
Not enough to hurt you. But it's cold.
Which is weird.
Yeah, it's cold.
Because there's no energy. Like there's no light. There's no heat. There's no.
No, like you give off heat in there, but you're not in a vacuum.
Yeah. So you're not boiling yourself.
But it's just, like, you've just reduced the ambient temperature. You've removed some of the ambient temperature. I like that. Zerusha's Rod. Liam, you had an idea as well?
Yes.
All right, let's hear it.
This would be the Chasm Knight's shield belt. It would just be, like, a back-facing fanny pack.
My favorite kind.
Of, like, arranged battery-looking things, kind of technical-looking. And they were used by this group of knights. And what it does is, the first time you get hit, it puts up Invigorate. For 6 points, functionally.
Oh, nice. Shielding.
Yeah, shielding for 6.
Not Invigorate, because Invigorate confers a bonus to somebody else.
Oh, two, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, shielding for 6 points, and then...
Does it have a recharge period?
Yes, that is done randomly. Every turn after that, you roll a d6 after you get 12 total points, or 10 total points, I think, actually. Might be better.
I really like that idea. So I thought you were going to say every time you roll a 6, it's recharged. I like that you have to accrue extra points.
Yes, and that you can't be done in one turn.
Yes.
Because you're basically just slapping it, like, all right, come back on, let's do this thing.
No, I think it just needs to spin up again.
Yeah. It's the flamethrower from the thing. No, I really like that idea. I think let's start with 12. If it needs to be reduced to where it would never come back on again, let's start with 12. Because if you roll 2 5s or 2 6s, so if you roll 2 5s, it comes back on. If you roll a 4 and a 4 and a 6, it comes back on. That's two conditions where it comes back on in 2 turns.
All right, yeah.
I think 3 turn generally should... So
be
three,
the goal?
3 and 4 should be the curve that we should shoot for.
And 2 is possible.
2 is possible, yeah. Mm. No, I really like that, Liam. That's a really good idea.
It's also just a nice defensive artifact.
Yeah, what were you calling it?
Chasm Knight's shield.
Can you explain Chasm Knight?
Chasm Sultan is the bassist for Todd Rundgren. I'm just naming this group of knights that wore this after him.
All right.
I will tell you how to spell it afterwards, because it is not how you think it is.
I put C-H-A-S out.
I don't think it is. No, I think they were an order of knights 3 or 4 civilizations ago. They're kind of famous.
Mm.
People know that these things exist, but you don't really find them.
I like it. I really like that.
And a battery is not out of the... Like, our time.
Oh, God. I've looked so far into batteries that don't decay.
Uh-huh.
I looked at carbon nanoplate batteries.
Those things are ridiculous.
That's cool.
They got to be in our game.
I was thinking more like the Baghdad battery, which is just...
For electroplating and counterfeiting.
That's my favorite thing in the world. That one of the first electronics they found was for counterfeiting. People were like, fuck you, Romans. That shit's gold.
The Romans were not around when the Baghdad battery was made. It predated them like by 1,300 years.
Yeah.
I remember somebody was like, ancient Rome. I remember when I was a kid, I was probably like 7. Somebody was like, ancient Rome is more recent to us than ancient Egypt was to the ancient Romans. I was like, like as a kid, that fucking blew my mind.
Time will blow.
Yeah, Cleopatra is closer to us.
All right, I feel really good about these, especially the artifacts in our 11th hour of this particular episode. Those are good.
This was 12 hours?
Yeah.
The 2 minutes to midnight.
If you were to divide this episode by 12.
Okay.
It's the 11th of that thing.
Okay.
And I swear I didn't just look around the room and see a maglite and come up with my idea.
Oh, shit. It's right there.
I swear I didn't look around the room and then see a battery.
Yeah.
There's a lot of electronics around us right now.
And a couple of fanny packs, if I'm going to be real.
I need a new fanny pack, by the way. So listeners, if you have a recommendation on fanny packs, I am in full dad mode. Zero shame. I'm interested in seeing what your recommendations are. So thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to get access to the rule books that we make for this game, you can check us out on patreon.com/RPGFS. At every tier, we've got something for patrons. If you want to see this game get made, we need more patrons to release cutting room floor clips, to release character sheets, rule books, and who can make NPCs for us for our longer-running campaign, Echoes of the Star Crypt.
And the money would be great to support our drug habits.
And also, equipment. We need to upgrade the studio, so we want to stream over video, ASAP, so that you guys can join us on Twitch or whatever platform we end up using.
Also, you can find us at facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can also find us on Instagram at RPG from Scratch. That's all one word.
And you can find us on our now much more active Twitter account, at Homebrew Hombres. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.